Bob mentioned me starting maybe with a little bit of history, and it does go way back, and I found myself kind of going down this tunnel. So we'll start with a little bit of history with how my family, my parents, and my dad's ministry, Youth Incorporated, and all of that, kind of how we crossed paths and then have kind of stayed with the Calvary Chapel family for a long time. So, a brief history of partnership. I couldn't find many good photos, actually, just at least on a Google search without properly digging. But here's a picture of the basement of the old Calvary Chapel down off of Jefferson Avenue. There's the stage there in the back. And then I'll kind of unpack a timeline here in a little bit and then share some of my what was going on with me kind of throughout this timeline. But Calvary Chapel basically handed over the basements in partnership with my father. A lot of you guys already know this, but bear with me. And fill in any gaps, too, please. A long time ago, he started the music venue outreach to the local music scene in Evansville. And he was having a Bible study at our house. I think I had to be 10 or 11, I think, when we were having the Bible study. So there was, I think Dad told me that the family is coming to church here. So if you're out here, you can raise your hand. But a young lady named Layla Taylor was coming to the Bible study, and she was also with Light of the World. Was it Light of the World then? In 93-ish. And she said, "Andy, you've got to meet my pastor, Chuck." And so Youth Inc. moved into the basement. And then years later, Youth Inc. buys a building. That's all in the timeline. We'll get to that in a minute. And then Calvary Chapel moves in with Youth Inc. And, you know, these are many years apart. So basically the church has not only watched my children grow up, but Calvary Chapel Evansville has pretty much literally watched me grow up as well. So, from the bottom of my heart, thanks. And I really mean it. So, there's thanks a lot. So, there's T. Hanks. There's a lot of T. Hanks right there. That took me way too long to put together. So here's a brief timeline that I got with Dad while he was driving the RV, you know, down to Florida, and I was on the phone with him, you know, questioning him, putting him under the spotlight. So in 92 is roughly about when Dad met Pastor Chuck. And also, so here's where I'm going to start kind of blending in a little bit of my story. So roughly in here, somewhere 93, I'm not sure exactly when it was, but Derek Hayden is the former pastor from New Beginnings, which is also a Calvary Chapel affiliate. He had just come back from Bible college from California, and this is one of the very first times that I remember the Lord clearly speaking to me. And I was in 92, I would have been 11. So I was around 11 or 12. And so I've had a few moments in my story where I call it the Holy Spirit knowing. I just kind of like, I just know this thing as true fact. So the Lord said, "You're going to go to a Bible college, Calvary Chapel Bible College." He was back and he was telling Dad about CCBC out in California, and how much it's impacted him and his passion for it. And I was just a little kid standing next to my dad waiting to leave church. Yes.
What is CCBC?
Calvary Chapel Bible College. Sorry. Yep, it was in Costa Mesa. So I was just a kid wanting to leave church, and Dad's talking. And then here comes Derek. He's also a talker. And, you know. It's very clear to me. So then Youth Inc., in around 93, Youth Inc. moved into the Calvary Chapel building and into the basement there. And So years later, we named the venue even after it had moved to Wired. But when it was in the basement at Calvary Chapel, it actually began as the Coffee House. And the Coffee House didn't sell coffee. It was just bands and candy bars, basically. And then eventually we moved into a coffee house and opened a coffee house, but we didn't name it the Coffee House. So we were confused. So Youth Inc. moves in 93, and somewhere in 2000, I think, was the year I started at Calvary Chapel Bible College. So I was actually sitting in the basement at Calvary Chapel in Jefferson. And at this time, I had just graduated high school. I was playing in bands myself. And I was, you know, I was always very serious about the bands that we played in and trying to book a lot of shows and play a lot. And I just didn't really feel like I wanted to move to California and leave my brother and the other guys that we were working on music with. So I just kind of stayed in Evansville. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was maybe going to wait until I was old enough to apply at the police department. And I didn't want to move to California to go to Bible college. Derek comes back into the kitchen that night. So I was in the concession kitchen in the back. You guys remember that kitchen? And I was sitting on the counter, and Derek is just talking again. You know, they just bought a building, the Kramer's Lake property. They just bought the building, and he's, like, super stoked and excited again. And, again, I had that Holy Spirit knowing. I was like, I'm supposed to go to this. This is the one. And so Derek leaves, and I was like, Dad, I'm supposed to go to this Bible college. I don't know why I know this, but I do know it. And he said, well, I don't have any way to get hold of Derek. I don't even know where the church is he's talking about. So he's like, well, let's go. So we, like, run out of the building, and we see them, the taillights kind of go around the corner, and we hopped in Dad's little Volkswagen minibus. And the thing's not fast. You know, it's got the pancake engine, right? Not like the wedding cake engine. And so we actually do catch up with him. We get directions, and then, you know, the rest is kind of history from there. And then 2004, Youth Inc. bought the building, or rented a building from Mike Miller, which is also, interestingly enough, Light of the World history there. And we rented the building on Main Street, and we opened Wired. So for a little while, we had the music venue Wired going that was a coffee shop. And then the Rev was the second name of the coffee house in the basement at the church on Jefferson. And then we ended up closing the Rev one and putting all of our efforts into the one on Main Street. Then 2007, 2006, very, you know, the day before 2007, day before the day before, Emily and I got married. Yay. So I had to put that on there. And if I would have put the kids' birthdays on here when they entered our lives and how that impacted us, you know, that's a whole different Sunday and a whole different busy timeline. So, and then 2008, Youth Inc. bought the building on 4th Street where Calvary Chapel was at for a long time. And so they moved in with us. So here's where we start to get into how the Lord has really kind of been shaping me and missions stuff. So we are running the music venue on 4th Street, very busy with bands and all of that outreach. And the radio station had come into play at that point. Smile was also going on at that point, also in the Youth Inc. building. And then so Emily, myself, and some other friends, we really wanted to step up the outreach stuff that we were doing with the music venue. And we decided we wanted to start like a venue church. There's no name for it, but just having a church in the weeknights at the music venue. So we've got secular bands coming in, Christian bands coming in, secular locals, you know, coming into the venue, and then we could bring them in for a time of intentionality if they were, you know, seeking to come to a space that they've already been to, that they're already comfortable with and familiar with. You know, we had all of our reasons to do this. And I was going to have different pastors on rotation, picking up where the others had left off in different denominations, but kind of a classic Calvary exegetical style teaching. And then pastors had to communicate with one another, like, oh, I left off at this verse, and this was where I was building. And then, so we were really kind of moving full steam ahead at starting this thing. And we had some friends that were down in Nashville that were going to move to Evansville to do this with us. And one Sunday morning, we were at Donut Bank, and we're just sitting there, and I was just like, guys, you know, we're like full steam ahead, right? I'm like, I don't think I want to start a church. And it's just kind of like the wrench in the gears of the machine. It's just kind of like, why? You know, and I was like, well, I mean, to be honest, it's just it's just another church in a city full of churches. Like, I don't know if I want to do that. There's people are seeking. There's still plenty of space for them to seek. There's a church in every corner in Evansville, and we're just going to be a different flavor. And I was like, if we started it, I'll tell you right now, a year from now, I'm going to be bored, and I'm not going to want to do it. I don't feel called to this. So everyone's, you know, air was let out of their balloons. They're like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. I kind of thought about it for a second, and you know, like the true and undefiled religion scripture came to me about caring for orphans and widows in their time of need. And I was like, maybe that. I was just like, I don't know, maybe going to Africa, because I never thought I would want to go to Africa, and I kind of don't want to go now. But what if? I was like, can anybody tell me I shouldn't go to Africa and work with widows and orphans? And then everyone was kind of like, I don't know. I guess that's fine. And I was just like, well, I don't know. So I went home and we actually applied for an orphanage school out of Jinja, Uganda. And we got accepted. But the next school didn't start for like a year and a half. And we'd been kind of like building ministry stuff with the music ministry and church stuff, and I was just kind of ready. Like, I didn't want to just twiddle my thumbs for a year and a half. I was also very naive. I needed every bit of that year and a half to prepare, but it's not what the Lord had in plan. So year and a half. Like, great, we got accepted. A year and a half. So I Googled. I couldn't even find it again later on, and it was totally the Lord. But I Googled Calvary Chapel Africa. And at the time, I didn't even realize South Africa was a country. I thought it was a geographical location. And, you know, now I've got multiple kids born in South Africa. But back then, you know, ignorance. And so I Googled Calvary Chapel, Africa, and this church popped up. So I just kind of opened it. It was the first one I found on a Google search. And it was in Durban, South Africa. So we moved to Durban, South Africa, the first move in 2010. Any soccer fans in the building? Anybody follow the World Cup or anything? Yeah, very big thing. Probably the number one biggest sporting event in the world. So that year, the World Cup, it rotates countries, was in South Africa. And so we ended up going in, like, middle to the end of 2010 because plane tickets were three or four times the price to get over there because of the World Cup. And so we were there in 2010 with Calvary Chapel Waterfall. That was the name of the church. So it was about 30, 40 minutes drive inland and kind of up the mountain from Durban, South Africa. And so we were there. That's a whole nother story as well, so I'm going to kind of just gloss over it. Emily, do you want to say something? Am I bringing up all kinds of feelings? So Emily and Isley. Isley, can you stand up? This is Isley. She's our oldest. She's 14 now, going to be 15 at the end of the summer. Isley was one. She just had her first year birthday party. Not long before we made the big move. So we were there. We thought we were going to be there for a really long time. The Lord had very different plans. And we ended up coming back after about 13 months. And so we were here. I came back to Youth Incorporated, was doing some music ministry stuff, doing a lot of stuff for the radio station at this point, kind of editing and copy work for, you know, radio sponsors, writing their promos and sponsorship stuff. And so fast forward, you know, it's been about 5 years since we came back from South Africa that first time. And South Africa was just like weighing on me. And, you know, the way we came back after 13 months, and we thought we were going to be there 5, 10, 15 years, you know, whatever happened, maybe I did fail miserably. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. It's a muddy mess sometimes. Trying to be obedient and, you know, so there's, you know, that kind of struggle. And I was just sitting in the office, and I walked over to Dad's office across the hall in the basement of the 4th Street building. And I said, I want to go back to South Africa, and I feel like I'm supposed to. But it's so impossible now. I don't even know how we did it for those 13 months. I don't know how we got there. I don't know how we got back, and then here I am again. And he's like, well, if the Lord wants it, you know, he'll make a way, and he'll make it clear. And then literally that night I got home, and I've got the old Ziploc bag of our cell phones out of a storage box or something, of our South African cell phones. And I opened them up, looked at them, and I think the night before I was thinking about it, and I threw the power cords away. Because they were in a different bag, and I was just like, I don't need these. And then this happened. I was like, maybe I do need those. And, like, I got the power cords out. I just remember washing the power cords in the sink because they were covered in coffee grounds. And then the next day I get back to the office, and I have an email from the pastor I haven't talked to in almost 5 years of that Calvary Chapel in Durban. And he said, would you consider moving back? And at this point, also, it's important to note that I'd started doing some counter-trafficking education for myself, and we were attempting to start, at this point, for about 2 years, actually, before that email. For about 2 years, we were trying to start a counter-trafficking ministry here in Evansville. So my brother-in-law, Emily's sister's husband, is British, and they had moved to the U.S. to be close to the family on this side of the pond for a little while. And he was doing counter-trafficking ministry with an organization in the U.K. So I was like, Dan, let's start something here. So I got my education, you know, that understanding of what it is and, you know, all of that stuff from him. And we tried to start what we were calling Justice 1930. It's a Bible reference. I have no idea what reference it is anymore. But 1930 in there somewhere. It's related to justice, probably. And we just couldn't get the funding. So then this thing happened again about South Africa kind of coming back to us. And then the Lord confirming it on our hearts. And I do see a pattern in our lives that the Lord confirms on outside sources only what he's put on our hearts first. For the charismatics in the room, just because someone prophesies over you doesn't mean that it's God's word or that it's even remotely truth. He always confirms what's in us through many ways. And anyway, so where was I? The email, Justice 1930, we ended up finding out that YWAM was running a Justice Discipleship Training School in Cape Town. So that's kind of what got us back into South Africa. And then our one-on-ones when we moved, you know, I'm kind of skipping lots of storyline that I could spend a long time on. But so I'm going to skip towards us being there. Our one-on-ones was a married couple. She was Swiss. He was Indian. They were our one-on-ones and became really good friends of ours while we were in South Africa for that discipleship school. And she was the founder of Escape. And we finished our commitment. We committed to 1 year to South Africa to just kind of see what the Lord wanted to do. The Calvary thing didn't work out. Interestingly enough, the pastor that said, "Will you come back?" He was now back in Cape Town, because the sending church for that church plant in Durban in 2010 was out of Cape Town. So he had moved back and was pastoring the church in Cape Town now. There, that's a whole nother storyline. The Calvary Church there, his parents were murdered, and they ended up kind of immigrating to, I think they're in New Zealand. They ended up immigrating to New Zealand. So we didn't, that was kind of like the end of our main Calvary connection. And even though the church was only probably 10 minutes away from where we were living. But that was kind of what got us into Escape, was with Miriam. She was the founder of the Safe House there, which it began as a YWAM outreach, kind of grew into its own thing. There was a very clear need in the area, and it became its own bona fide organization. And so we committed to 6 months to the school and then staffing for 6 months in South Africa to just kind of test the waters and see what the Lord wanted to do. And then that was in 2016. So very early 2017, we came back here, and I did not want to go back to South Africa. Second move and call in Florida. So Florida is often, the numbers change, but it's often the number three state with the highest rates of trafficking in the U.S. Bradenton. It's just on a stretch right here in a line. Bradenton, Tampa Bay, and Sarasota. Number one, number two, number three. Those three hot spots. Now, I would have thought Miami, but and now this is also, that's an old statistic. It might be different now, and it's always changing too as different information comes in every year. We traveled down to Florida, and we're in Sarasota meeting with a YWAM base there, and thinking maybe we would do some counter-trafficking ministry in Florida and partner with YWAM there. And they said yes. You know, we met with them. We spent a few days. We were actually staying in one of the dorm houses. The girls' dorm was, the girls' team, with the whole team, was on outreach. And so they had left the country. But the YWAM base there still had the lease on the house that they were staying in. So that's where we stayed, in that house. And it was what I wanted, right? I wanted to be in Florida. I wanted to do this counter-trafficking ministry. YWAM said, yes, we would love to have you and your family on staff. You can staff any schools that we run. We would love to support ministry with you guys, you know, if you wanted to start a counter-trafficking ministry. Great, perfect. It's everything we wanted, but there was zero peace in it. And so with that, I was just feeling very lost. And we were at a church service. They brought us up and prayed over us. They knew that we'd just come back from the mission field. And again, South Africa was haunting me. And I'm telling you, I didn't want to go. And that's an understatement. I did not want to go back to South Africa. I didn't want to raise my kids in South Africa. The crime is just always around. There's, you know, it's just always around anywhere you go. So I just didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be in South Africa. I didn't want my daughters to marry some, you know, South African bloke and, like, want to stay, and I want to go back to America. And then, like, our house is split over continents. And I just didn't want to do it. But then I'm sitting in this church service, and South Africa is just haunting me. And the people that we know and the friends that we had, just like, I found myself like reading through my Facebook messages from different friends, and I was just like, what am I doing? This is like, I don't want to go back to South Africa. And so the next morning, Monday morning, we were.
What year again? When was this?
This was 2017.
Okay.
Any questions? You know, like, I know I kind of you know, bounce around a little bit. I am related to my father. So just interrupt me at any time if I'm unclear about something. YWAM is a youth with a mission ministry. It's been around since the 70s. It's like a disciple. They have a discipleship training schools and bases all over the world. So Monday morning we were still in Florida, and we were at the YWAM staff prayer meeting for the week. And again, I had that Holy Spirit knowing that, it broke me, because I knew we were going back to South Africa, and I did not want to go. And so in the prayer meeting, I just lost it. I just started weeping. So we get back in the car, and I tell Emily, like, we're supposed to go back to South Africa. I was like, if the Lord is telling me that we are going, I don't want to go. He's got work to do, because I'm not going back to work in the kitchen at YWAM, you know, volunteering on the base. You know, Escape would call and they'd ask me to come hang some cabinets in the kitchen and do this. And like, I feel called to counter trafficking ministry. The Lord's got work to do to make that happen, because I'm not going back to just go hang cabinets in the kitchen at the safe house. And our funding has to change, because I can't, you know, we were around a lot of poor missionaries, and they are, they're a drain. I didn't want to do like the sad missionary thing. I wanted to go and not have to worry about our finances. We have our budget, and we go and do the ministry and work that we're called to do without having all of the other stress. So I think the Lord heard that, and he said, well, I've got work for you too. So our funding was very much transformed. I was at the Calvary Chapel Pastors Conference. I had a table set up in the back there, and the pastor came to me and said, I really think you need to read this book. And so I got on Amazon. I bought it on Dad's credit card and ordered the book, read through the book, and it revolutionized my perspective and my heart for support raising. And then it was just win after win. And then, oh, sorry, I jumped ahead. After the prayer meeting, right, Lord's got work to do. And I woke up two mornings later. I woke up, we are still in that rental house of the YWAM base there in Florida. And I had a message from Arun, which was Miriam's husband. And he said, we just had a meeting with the South African government, the DSD, the Department of Social Development, and they've asked Escape to open a children's facility because we're only registered for adults. And the board has discussed it, and we want you to come back and manage that project. So I said, well, short answer is yes, but the Lord's got work to do. And we ended up back in South Africa and working with the Safe House, as you guys all well know. So there and back again. There are some slight pop culture references throughout this, if you can spot them. There and back again, and here and there. So that's the, we've been in Durban, we're back, we're in Cape Town, we're back, we're going back to Cape Town, and here we are again, actually. So living in Cape Town, we did all kinds of ministry besides just the Safe House stuff. Before COVID, this was a group of boys that were always begging for money and food. Some of them had parents, some of them didn't. The ones that did have parents, they might as well not have parents. They would often, so their neighborhood is about 3 miles probably from this area. This is like the touristy, beachy area. Everybody comes in from South Africa, from town. You know, everybody comes to this area right here. So their house is about 3 miles away from here. And they would walk in. Sometimes they would be heading home too late, and it's too dangerous to be just kind of out on the streets at night because other gangster guys will beat them up and take the money that they've begged for, or their flip-flops, excuse me. So they would have these, like, hidden spots, like, in the bush, holes, basically, that they have, like, boards, and, you know, they would sleep in these holes sometimes. So, rough group of kids. And so we had this ministry. We took them, I think I've shared this before, we took them to the aquarium up in town one Christmas. We bought them all, like, nice hoodies. So South Africa calls Nike, Nike. So we bought them all. We took them to the Nike outlet and let them pick out a hoodie. And so COVID ruined a lot of things. And it really kind of dispersed these guys. And, you know, the COVID thing was another level in South Africa. So it was, you know, illegal to be on the streets, you know, all kinds of stuff. So let's see here. So there's another thing that we did. It was a fundraiser over 16 days of activism. It's a UN initiative globally. It kind of crosses Women's Rights Day. I don't know, there's like five or six different kind of days recognized within these 16 days. So they called it 16 Days of Activism. So I started a 16 Waves of Activism fundraiser, and I don't think it ran last year. I kind of handed it over to a surf shop when we left. And anyway, so this was a pretty cool thing. Here was the last one that we had. This is our, like, set up table where people could come register and get their gift bags and everything like that. So the last one that ran was actually a run, surf, yoga. I know I saw the material on the table outside about yoga. But we ran a run, surf, yoga thing, and it was really fun. And brought a lot of awareness to the community about not just trafficking, but all of the things within the 16 days of activism that are at least important to be mindful of, right? The people that we see day in and day out in the grocery stores, on the sidewalks, at the beach, or the park, you know, people are dealing with a lot of different things than us. Here's a picture of our escape team at some kind of training event, I think, that we are invited to. So I'm just going through some pictures of our time in South Africa.
Are all of them foreigners, or some of them South African?
Most of them are South African. Mm-hmm. And then we had, at the safe house, we had a relationship with a couple universities in Europe, Germany, maybe the Netherlands. And we would get interns from them that were like young ladies studying social work. They would come and do an internship with Escape for like 6 months.
Was it Christian or secular?
I think there were secular universities. And then my whole time there, I think only one girl came that wasn't a believer to do the internship. Most of the time they were believers. So here we are. The picture is actually better than this. You can see all the way to the end, but the computer cropped off a bunch of it. Here we are at a staff prayer meeting one morning. Yeah, there's me. And then also the lots of need in South Africa outside of, you know, really any single need. There was a big fire in one of the townships. Let's see. Let me skip forward. So this was the township here. These are homes. These are the bathrooms. That's the water. If you can see the water right there. So we had a trailer, and I donated the trailer for a while for this ministry to collect things because there's a massive fire. Hundreds of displaced people right there near us, because this neighborhood was across the street from our neighborhood, and we lived in a very regular looking neighborhood like you would, you know, live in here, and then that was right across the street from us. So it's a rough spot. I mean, Isley and I were reading books one evening, and we heard gunshots. And so we kind of like just kind of sink kind of low. And then there was some taxi drivers shooting at each other, and a couple of the guys died. So that's how close we were. You can hear the gunshots, and it was loud enough. You're like, ooh, maybe we should get low. here's the back wall. It's just a cool picture. That's the back wall of the safe house.
One girl said her, Debbie Brammer said her Marco Polo crashed, so I was trying to get to that. Thank you.
Welcome. There's Emily and Little Sailor. He was born in South Africa. At least for me, I didn't agree to the name Sailor for this reason. Maybe Emily did. But he was born in an old whaler's cottage in an apartment that we were renting. And we named him Sailor. Emily's mom was visiting when he was born, and she said, any name but Sailor. And I was like, Sailor it is? Just kidding. That did happen, but that wasn't my reaction. So there's me and River. We did a big hike up the mountain by ourselves one day. Well, we had a couple friends, but I mean without the other kids. So that was our life in South Africa. Lots of ministry, lots of friends. Kids were born there. And COVID happened. And so COVID really put a stop on a lot of things. It put a stop on all the progress with the children's facility, the Department of Social Development wanted it, I suppose, the children's facility, but there's just a lot of red tape. We lost a lot of time. COVID halted the entire process for over a year before the government even started looking at the application again. And it also just changed. It changed a lot of things. It changed people. It exposed things in leadership. So the waves got choppy in our lives. So we began to kind of drift. We kind of changed. Or maybe we didn't change. I don't know. There's the scene in Indiana Jones. As a kid, he comes out of the cave after finding the cross of Coronado. And his Boy Scout troop was gone. And he, like, runs out of the cave. And he's like, everybody's lost but me. a change happened. Probably just all of us. We'll just go with all of us. So then we start asking, what direction? All right, Lord, well, what do you want from us? With the ministry in South Africa, there was a heavy push towards more government funding, and you guys know, most of you guys know me well. That's the opposite direction I want to go. I do have a snake on my coffee mug. I think less government is the way to go, especially when ministry and truth are at stake, and money. So we were never told that we couldn't share Jesus with our residents. Nothing like that happened. But there was a drift, in my opinion, and there was a drift where Christ was becoming less the center of the restoration program and more of like a piece of the restoration program. And, staff changes, big staff changes were made. COVID took... our interns all left the country. The staff that I had been putting together and pouring into to run with the children's facility once it got opened, they had life changes and they kind of left. And so the change happened. And so we're asking, like, all right, well, Lord, well, what direction? You were very clear about us coming back. You confirmed it outwardly. You confirmed it inwardly. And then you made it very clear and provided ways. So what do you want us to do now? So we were asking the question, this is our life here in South Africa. Our kids were born here. We have a lot of close friends here. Our hearts are here. But, you know, I kept changing my hours and minimizing my hours until I was just like, I can't do this. So like, all right, Lord, what do you want? What do you want us to do? So I met with our board at Escape, and they suggested a sabbatical. We talked with the board here in Evansville with Youth Incorporated about a sabbatical, and we knew that it wasn't just a break. You know, I could sense it. We could feel it, that there was a bigger change coming. So what's the right way? Is there a one-way street we're supposed to be on, going a single direction? You know, are we on the wrong way now? What direction are we supposed to go? And the Lord just kind of really seemed very silent at the time about it. little side note, fun fact. I made this map for River for his cars. And it wasn't until after I'd made the map that it's all left-hand. Sorry, wait. I confused myself. It's all left-hand drive. No, right-hand drive. What do we drive here? It's, you know, English, South African traffic directions. So I didn't even realize I was drawing the map, you know, on the other side of the road. But because in South Africa, we drive on the other side of the road from here. So it was even more of a fitting photo. It was just like, what direction? So we decided to step out. There's another reference in here. Probably only my kids will get. Stepping out into uncertainty. That's... I actually don't know which kid that is. It looks like Everly, but it might be Isley. Sailor over here, Sunny there. That probably is Everly. So stepping out, and, you know, we could have... We were established well enough in South Africa at this point, because this was only, you know, in this storyline, it was only a year and a half, 2 years ago, year and a half ago. And so we were established well enough. I knew enough ministries. You know, I waited for a while thinking the Lord would bring another counter-trafficking ministry. I got two other offers to leave Escape to go work with these other ministries, one in the airport, profiling passengers coming in the immigration line, and it's actually exactly what I wanted to do, but I felt like the Lord said no, and so I continued on with Escape. So I thought maybe the Lord was going to bring another offer in, and it didn't happen. And how am I on time?
Yeah.
My wife says wrap it up. That, huh? Okay, so that's all in here. I could have found a ministry and said, hey, would you like me to join your staff? And maybe not the first one would have said yes, but I could have found someone. But I didn't feel that was what I was called to. The Lord had called us to this, and I didn't want to move again until he called me to the next thing. So we decided to step out, and we came back. We ended up selling everything that we had collected over the years. We let our lease go on our house, and we came back here to the U.S. And then we traveled. Here we are packing up in our house. There's our dog named Indiana. We never thought we'd live in Indiana with a dog named Indiana, and now we look like fanatics. Sorry? This was, Emily, what year? 20...
December. A year ago December.
It took us a long time to sell all of our things. So here we are in the airport. I'll get to this person later. I actually only discovered this woman standing here and the significance of it as I was putting the slideshow together on Friday. So I'll get to the significance of it. It's not a huge thing. I just thought it was interesting. So here we are. We just landed in the U.S. They're checking out America. from the hotel room in Chicago.
It looks sunnier and warmer in South Africa.
Yes. Yes, very much so. So then we traveled the U.S. for, you know, until November. We came back 2 days before Thanksgiving, this last Thanksgiving. So we kind of traveled around. We tried to land in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, with some other friends, and just kind of really seeking the Lord on what he wanted us to do, and visiting some friends in state, you know, national parks, and taking that time in our sabbatical. We had a sabbatical coach that we worked with over Zoom, and trying to seek the Lord, but still feeling small in the grand scheme of things. Still not a lot of direction from the Lord, not a lot of, you know, he just seemed very silent, and it was just kind of dragging on, and really feeling the pressure of, like, my responsibilities as a husband and a father to my kids, but then feeling confused about ministry stuff, and, you know, really just kind of like, Lord, you were so clear then, why aren't you clear now? So, A Bag of Laundry in an Open Road, there's another reference probably only my kids will get. So we were parked in a driveway of this young man, family man. I say young because he's 30, not even 30 yet. Friends of friends of ours from South Africa. And so we are parked in the driveway with our RV. And he's now a very good friend. We've spent a lot of time with them. But we'd only known them for a couple days at this point. And I was throwing a fit. He said, yeah, you guys are free to use the house while we're gone. You know, laundry machine's down there. So Emily asked me to change laundry over. And I'm over there taking laundry out, kind of throwing it in the dryer, and just kind of throwing a fit about it and just kind of talking to the Lord. Just like, where are you? How long are you going to stay silent? You know, so I was like, Psalm 121? Okay, well, what does that mean? Like, fine, I'll look up Psalm 121. So I go, there is no Psalm 121. It ends at verse 6. So it's like, I lost my mind. I'm driving the wrong way on a one way. It's like feeling lost at sea, even worse. There's my quote, Jesse Fuller. So I looked up Psalm 121. If I raise my eyes to the hills, from where does my help come? It comes from Adonai, the maker of heaven and earth. And we're actually surrounded by mountains in Coeur d'Alene. You just kind of, you can see mountains everywhere you go. So it's like, okay. Raise your hand if you've done Bible roulette and it applied in your life. Yeah. So it's like, okay, Lord. But it doesn't mean a whole lot. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to look up the 21st verse starting from verse 1 in chapter 1. So I counted 21 verses forwards, and this was the verse. But you, Adonai, are a shield for me. You are my glory. You lift my head high. With my voice I call out to Adonai, and he answers me from his holy hill. So, okay, well, I get it. It's his direction. I'll take that. You know, he confirmed, like, the, you know, with a second verse with me, a second roulette, right? Second Bible roulette. But now what? So, more waiting, but at least I had some peace. Where's my seal? I had a lazy seal laying on a harbor wall. Maybe I moved it on accident. But I had some peace, right? I kind of felt like, all right, the Lord gave me this verse. And so I held on to this verse, and we weren't done traveling. You know, we still made it to Oregon and came back to Idaho, where Daisy was born, in the camper at a campground in Idaho, on purpose. And, so I would quote Psalm 121, those first two verses. I would say the first verse, and then my kids would answer back the second verse. But it was for me. It wasn't for them. It was for me because I needed that encouragement.
Can you go back to the second, please?
So that was, I kind of felt like finally the Lord gave me something to hold on to. So I held on to it. And it really kind of helped me get through the rest of the waiting. So Daisy was born. We kind of end up moving back to Indiana. Idaho was ridiculously expensive. After COVID, thank you, COVID, the California was emptying into all of the bordering states, getting away from their politics and prices. So we bought a house where it's out by the landfill here in Evansville, and this is the dirt pit across the road from us. And I have a friend that works at the landfill, and he's like, if the landfill's closed, no one's going to chase you off. Hopefully. I mean, we just apologize, right? So anyway, that was us. Me and the kids went and played in the dirt pit, and threw rocks in the mud and all kinds of stuff. So new horizons, this unexpected journey to Indiana. We did say we would never live in Indiana again. So I was asked to apply by my brother-in-law to Horizons International. Has anybody heard of Horizons International? The position for training coordinator came up, and my brother-in-law was on the leadership team with Horizons. And I had not even heard of Horizons, to be honest, until he said, I think you should apply for this. I think you'd be really good at it. And so I was like, oh, I'll pray about it. And then the next day I was like, okay, I'll apply. So the application process was kind of long. There was a lot of waiting involved, and that was also torturous. And just kind of leaning into that Psalm 121 in those times. So I'm on the phone at the end of this application process with the founder of Horizons, a man named George Husney. And he wanted to talk with me about just finances and just kind of like make sure that we are on the same page, that we understand one another, the commitment involved on both sides, and wanted to pray with me. So, did I bump the button? Oh, no. I'm not used to fancy stuff. He wanted to pray with me. So, he's like, okay, well, I'm going to tell Kyle to send you the contract for you to sign. And I said, great. He said, well, let's pray. So, I was sitting in my truck. I just left a different meeting with the pastor of New Beginnings Now. Him and I had lunch together, and it was raining. He calls me. We have this conversation. I'm sitting in the truck, and it's raining outside. And he says, well, let's pray. And he says, Lord, when we lift our eyes to the hills, from where does our help come? And we know that it comes from you. There's my seal. I think it's his ear. Oh, yeah, he's just taking a nap.
Did you have a pet seal?
A pet seal?
Oh, no. Oh, no, you didn't.
I took the picture. He's a wild seal. Oh, yeah. I saw a guy get bit. So, that last piece of confirmation, the Lord using that verse, really, you know, bolstered my confidence in, okay, Lord, thank you. Like, I can move forward in confidence when I'm struggling and I'm feeling inadequate. I know that you are behind me, that you are the one that's laid this path before me. And so I can boldly move forward in the calling that you've placed on me. And so proclaim, disciple, equip is Horizon's main motto. So also a quick side note on human trafficking. I don't believe that I'm done with everything that I've learned and experienced and, the wisdom and everything that the Lord has given me through my time in counter-trafficking in South Africa. I did get asked to do a training for Crossroads, a trafficking training. I don't know if it's going to happen. I suggested them finding organizations that are currently doing trainings. But Horizons is I'll talk a little bit more about it here in a second. Horizons has their main base of operations in Beirut, Lebanon. So there's massive refugee camps in Lebanon. And if I've learned anything about human trafficking, it's that traffickers prey on vulnerability. And you don't get much more vulnerable than living in a refugee camp. So I don't believe that my time in trafficking is done and counter-trafficking is finished. I just don't know exactly what it looks like yet. There has been some discussion within Horizons leadership about getting some policies and child protection policies and other things in place, protocols for when our ministry team in Lebanon comes across things. So we'll see what the Lord does with that. So now I do have some stuff on that table. Everything on that table you guys can keep. You can take home and read through. You can sign up for the newsletters. Horizons puts out newsletters every quarter. I do need these back, but I'm just going to look at those. So the Lord has put Muslim ministry across my path. And I've always been intrigued by Muslim people. Really what started my process of overseas, maybe Africa, I don't know. We were having curry with some friends here in Evansville. And it was my first time having curry. And there was an Indian woman wearing a sari. And I was paying her and, you know, all of that stuff as we were leaving. And she just looked so sad. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help her. I was like, if I would have just prayed for her or told her about Jesus, it's just another God amongst the many gods that she has. And I didn't know how to properly be effective in, like, piercing the wall between us with Christ. And that's kind of how it has been with perceiving Muslims. We had a lot of interactions. South Africa has a lot of Muslims. I bought Emily's car. I bought from a Muslim guy, both of our cars actually. But this guy's wife was sick and cancer or something. It was something serious. So I said that I would like to pray for her. And so he said tomorrow. So he went, he came back the next day with his wife because she wasn't there. And they came over for tea and we prayed over them. So we had some interactions with Muslim people, but I wouldn't say necessarily before this point I felt called to Muslims. I will say I've since started with Horizons, I've been doing deep dive studying, going through the courses of these books and things that I've just kind of passed through the room. It's very much grown my heart, my perspective, and my passion for Muslim people. So more than a quarter of the world's population are Muslim that need to hear the gospel. This is a George Houston quote. We have every reason in the world to reach Muslims everywhere we find them with courage and boldness, unashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of salvation to all those who believe from every nation on earth, particularly Muslims. So the Middle East Center for World Missions is our big location in Beirut. We have a bunch of different ministries going on there. We have about 200 refugee children that come every day for school. So Lebanon is religiously open. And so a lot of people call it like the gateway to the Middle East. So they've started the Middle East Center for World Missions as a place for equipping and training people as they're going through the Middle East to advance the gospel. So we've got all kinds of programs and things happening in the Middle East. We're connected with pretty much every church. I'm supposed to be hopefully meeting with a man here in Evansville that just moved here a few months ago who is Syrian, and he gave his life to Christ in Lebanon. So I'm excited to hear his story about how he came to Christ, if he actually is connected to people that we know. Cubs to Lions is a very cool program that Horizons does. And I'm involved with helping to coordinate, these things. Cubs to Lions is the discipleship course for believers with a Muslim background. I was really encouraged and impressed that Horizons' heart is for the gospel and for discipleship, so much so that we find believers with Muslim backgrounds, we pay for their flights to come to the conference, and we pay for their conference, you know, we run the conference, but for their, like, room and their board. Yeah. And then Engage Muslims with Christ is, we're running it as a weekend seminar. We've got it as a 10-week study, and soon we'll be offering it as a 5-week intensive on how to engage Muslims with Christ.
All those things are under Horizon, is that right? Each of those?
Yep, that's all Horizon's ministry. So I skipped ahead, I'll go back. But Engage Muslims with Christ, we're actually running a weekend seminar in September out at New Beginnings. And Lord willing, George is on the schedule to come out and actually teach the course. So we cover things like Muslims through biblical eyes, the Jesus's model types and stories, and contrasts between Christianity and Islam, and, you know, how to really develop a natural, organic connection, right, relationship. Not just sterilely screaming the truth, but actually connecting with love. Because without love, what is it? So another thing that Horizons does, especially here in the U.S., is international student ministry. So a third of all international students in the world, a third of them, come here to the U.S. to study. And 80% of them never set foot in an American home. And one of the things I've learned is this: it's true in the Middle East, it's true in African countries, that the youth respect family, they respect older people and their wisdom much more than they do here in the U.S. And they value being a part of a family. So they leave that, and then they come here, and then 80% of them never even get invited into a home. So we're on 10 different major campuses across 7 states, and then soon enough, that'll probably, Indiana will probably be turning green as New Beginnings has a ministry to college students called Lakeside College and Career that I'm going to be coming alongside of in partnership to do international student outreach with New Beginnings there. So I'm pretty excited about that. That'll also start this fall. So from one man, God made every nation living on the earth and fixed the limits of their territories and the periods when they would flourish. He did this so that people would look for him and perhaps reach and find him, although in fact he's not far from each one of us. That's Acts 17. So in other words, God has placed the lost in places where they can be found, and he's placed them near us. So if you want to find out more about the Horizons ministry, you can go to horizonsinternational.org. And I'm not really supposed to give this one out yet because it's live but not launched. So there's some small changes to be made. But it's fine. So this is the Engage course. This is one of this is the course that Horizons wanted me to cut my teeth on, is the Engage course. And that is the end, I believe. So, yes, Kathy. Okay. I'm fragile.
Do you feel that the Christian Church in America
is If it's not pointed at me, don't worry about saying it nicely. Only if it's about me, say it nicely. Yeah, I would think so. Some of it's fear-based, and I think some of it's media. The media's done it. You know, like, man, I wish I had. Please take any of the newsletters that I have on the table over there. The Horizons newsletters are not my personal one. But George, so George, our founder, he was born in Lebanon. As a Lebanese boy, became a believer. And as a young teenager, he kind of fell in with some missionaries that were going door to door and kind of spreading the gospel around Lebanon. And he was with them for a while. And then one day they kind of went left to the villages to the left instead of right to the villages to the right. And he's like, whoa. He's like, this is where the Muslim villages are. And they're like, well, we know. He's like, no. Like, we don't need to go to the Muslims. We need to go over here to the non-Muslims. And then the guy said, well, George, Jesus died for the Muslims and loves the Muslims as much as he did for everybody else. And that was kind of the beginning of George's perspective shift. You know, for him culturally, you know, they have not gotten along. A lot of violence on one another. On both sides, to both sides, to either side. And so it is, I mean, it was especially for somebody like George, it was a lot to overcome. It was a huge perspective shift. Honestly, the Lord is doing, the Holy Spirit is moving in the lives of Muslim people like crazy. You know, with dreams and, you know, all kinds of stuff. People are coming, Muslims are coming to Christ by larger and larger numbers. I don't know exactly what the issue with the American church is, but I think a lot of it, there's a lot of fear, a lot of misunderstanding, I think, too. There's a lot of space for Christ to be shared, especially through relationship with Muslim people. And Muslims are more open than you would actually think about talking about religion. It's a very American thing. I was only like 18 or 19. We were a bunch of friends. We were hanging out, sitting on the front porch. And you know how it was as kids. You know, like, oh, they're just hanging out over here. And so people just start showing up. And, you know, there's like 10 or 12 of us just hanging out on the front porch on the east side. And a girl said, she's like, oh, I'll talk about anything except for politics and religion. And those are like my favorite things to talk about. And I just remember thinking, like, how dumb is that? But I guess it's a pretty common thing. Americans don't like to talk about politics and religion. But a lot of the world does. A lot of the world loves to talk about politics and religion. And Muslims love to talk about politics and religion. There is a lot of space and a lot of openness. And I think that one of the things, the beauty things about the Engage course is there is a lot of space, but there's also a lot of room to misstep and kind of get that door shut in your face. So that's one of the great things about the Engage course, is it teaches you kind of how to navigate that, right? Because it's not only is it a different religion, are we unfamiliar with the dynamics of living in it and the identity that that religion places on the individual, but you know, you've got things that, you know, Islam teaches. Muhammad taught that is it theology? Theology is the enemy of religion. So studying the truth is the enemy of religion. Like, how are we supposed to properly find the truth without studying it? So not only do you have all those things, the heavy identity, the placement in your family, the placement in your culture, your job is tied to it. But you've got, I just lost it.
Your identity is, in the Muslim countries, among Muslims, your identity, your job, your family.
Yes, it's a different way of thinking. Yes, thank you. You have, so not only the identity, but how you get to your conclusion is not linear like us. It's not logical. This and this means that. This without that means this. They're not getting to it logically. So it's a very different way of processing the world around them entirely. Not just the obvious things like the cultural differences, but there's also the whole way the brain works is different too.
So who was the woman in black in the airport that you mentioned?
Oh, yes, good point. That I had no idea that I would be... That's the only picture I took. Oh, you guys should have seen the chaos, the circus that we were in the baggage claim. We had 3 bags each because we flew on humanitarian tickets, and then we purchased extra bags, and we had a 100-pound dog in a 50-pound box, and, I mean, it was ridiculous. And then that was the only picture I took, and it happened to be a Muslim woman is, you know, in the picture. And then fast forward to now, it's just like doing Muslim ministry. It was just kind of like subtle foreshadowings. You know, I didn't notice it until yesterday when I grabbed the slide to throw it into the presentation program. I just thought it was quite interesting.
They're just a black silhouette, aren't they?
Yeah.
Almost.
Yep. Hey, wait, she needs to wear this.
No. Oh, she won't.
Were you talking about the Lord confirmed things about where y'all was going? Did you get confirmation before him or after?
Together at the same time. We both kind of felt in Florida when we thought we wouldn't be going back to class, and we both, after the prayer meeting, both said we kind of thought that we were supposed to go back to that. But, you know, we both confirmed that that's what we were.
There's a book that came out about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
He's a teenager. He gets arrested by the Israelis, and the Israelis actually turn him. He realized, gee, these are family-oriented people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So that's the book that you're talking about, Son
yes.
of Hamas. It's
yes.
a really good book.
And since the last October 7th thing, he's actually went into seclusion for a while, and he's come back out because of October 7th thing. And his focus is on the children. But he explained to the Muslim people as very barbaric towards children and women.
even imagine the, or how to deal with that or change minds over that.
Yeah.
I mean.
So, but that's not most Muslims.
Yeah.
The majority of Muslims are not that way. The majority of Muslims are just people living their life, you know, working their jobs, raising their family, you know, trying to get by like everybody else. That's the majority of Muslims. There is a...
They're more Muslim in name than they are in actual belief system.
Right. Well, kind of both. It's still a blend. But, I mean, a blend of as far as, like, their religious system. But even like the religious, even most religious Muslims aren't violent. Like, how many extremist Muslims are there? I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah.
Why does it sound like that, Kathy?
Because in the United States, a person is one who's raped, it's very hard for them to get a conviction because they think about, oh, she asked for it by the way she's dressed.
I don't think that's true what you're saying.
No. If there's a rape that happens, they kill the raper and the rapist. I mean, the rapee and the raper. They kill both. Both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, so there is a reality to it, but it's not the majority of the reality. You know, chances are the Muslim that you see standing in front of you in the coffee shop just wants to get their coffee. They're late for work or they're exhausted from work. Yeah. Yeah, there's
to know the Lord because they're turned away from that.
Yeah, and there's no question about it. Islam is a wicked, evil religion. But not all of Muslims are wicked, evil people. Well, any more than what we're all born under.
Thank you.
So they see Jesus as a prophet under Muhammad. So
yeah.
Nothing in the New Testament, but they're from people of the book. Jews and Christians are called, and so they give lip service. But then, depending on the country and the time, they'll persecute very heavily the Christians. And Jews have been, after Israel was formed, Jews were pretty much kicked out of most of the Muslim countries, right? Whereas before, they were pretty much protected. Isn't that correct? The protection by our own.
I am not an expert on the history of Muslim, Islam, and Christianity, and territories. I know a heck of a lot more than I did a year ago, but I'm by no means an expert on all of it. And it's a rabbit hole, and it's layered, and there's a lot to it to you know properly understand but Jesus still loves the Muslims. He still loves the worst of them. His desire is to see them come to Him and be at His feet as the Son of God. So I invite all of you guys, as we have more things kind of rolling out promotionally, inviting you guys to New Beginnings in the fall for the weekend seminar. It'll be a Friday night, like 6 to 9-ish, and then it'll be Saturday kind of most of the day, probably like 9 to 3-ish, something like that. September 6th and 7th.
So is that Labor Day weekend?
I think it's the first weekend after Labor Day. So we'd love for you guys to come out and sit through the seminar. I'm full time with Horizons now.
Are you traveling very much? Have you raised your support, or are you still raising support?
I'm still on support. I'm on a hybrid, so I do get some compensation with Horizons, but then we're still on support as well. And I've traveled some. I haven't had to travel a whole lot. I'm assuming at some point still maybe this year I'll end up in Lebanon for a bit. I was kind of hoping to go, if I was going to go earlier and not go closer to the election. Because you never know what's going to happen.
Where your
who's going to speak at the seminar?
George Husney. He's the founder with Horizons. So George is actually... is plural, but the S is silent. So it's George's, but the S is silent. And Husney is Houssney.
Just like it sounds.
Houss.
Double S.
Yeah.
Ney. Mm-hmm.
And he is in the headquarters at Lebanon.
He's back and forth. He actually, so we had a huge, I guess they still have it, property in Boulder, Colorado, that they were doing a lot of their training out of. They had like a year-long discipleship course for when Muslims give their life to Christ, for them to come and live there in the dorms. And COVID changed a lot for Horizons as well. So they're in the process of selling the building. And I think they're undecided on whether they're going to open up a single place in the U.S., because the Middle East Center for World Missions is growing quite a lot. So he lives in Boulder. We have some staff in Boulder. I started February 1st as my first official start date. And I'd say it's probably close to half the time he's been in Lebanon. So he's back and forth a lot. Him and I meet once a week, and often I'll get a message and be like, hey, he's in Egypt speaking at some conference or some church or some event, and so he's all over.